Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday morning. It is the fourth day of October. We welcome you. We have a lot to talk about. We have a wonderful group. Let me introduce them. A reminder that you can be a part of the program by simply writing to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Well, yes, good morning indeed, but this is the kind of time that that really gets into my blood, and I get to worry a lot about, are we going to make it? You know, is everybody aware that we need the money in order to keep going, and that you can just go to a phone and dial 1-800-323-9262, or, you know, go to your computer and do WAMC.org, and we'll live. We'll live because of you. This is your radio station. You made it. You keep it. And we really do love and trust you to do what's right. So could you do it now? Just now. Go to WAMC.org and put something in the pot.
Hi.
Hi. Is that what you meant? Hi?
Yeah, I said hi.
That's good.
Mike, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. Mark Whitman is also here. Well, I didn't give Mike's Mike Spain is the former associate editor of the Times Union, and Mike has long been a part of this program, and we're thrilled that he is with us again. Wall Street investment banker Mark Whitman is here. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm well.
So my mother called me the other day.
Uh-oh.
And she said, I need some advice. Some of my friends are afraid of what's going on in the world with Putin and everything. So they're taking out a lot of cash and putting it in their apartments. And I said, well, if you're that...
Do you have their addresses?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I said, well, if you're that afraid, I got bad news, because the answer is gold and a revolver, not cash. But we did go on to talk about her financial planning for the rest of the year. And dovetailing off of Alan's point, she is a fortunate older woman who's got required minimum distributions coming out of pension plans.
Good
and
point.
We made sure that what we're doing with those is assigning those directly to the charities of her choice, because that is far more tax efficient. She could be more generous by doing that. So for anyone who's lucky enough to be in that position, that's something that perhaps vis-a-vis Alan's plea around WAMC might be relevant to them.
No, well, that's really important, because people do get these benefits and they don't know what to do with them all the time. And this is a good way to do it, is say, I know what I'll do.
Yeah, and even more importantly, if you're getting the benefit and you're contributing to any nonprofit, you should be doing them in conjunction with one another, because the federal government basically will take a smaller chunk and allow you to contribute more.
Really? Could you explain that just a little more?
Yes, you're not taxed on the distributions if they go directly. In most tax situations, if those required minimum distributions go directly to a nonprofit, the government will not tax you on the gains associated with those distributions.
I get it.
But again, as always, please check with your qualified tax professional.
As always.
Or your doctor.
Not valid in Wisconsin. Rosemary Armeo.
Yes.
Professor.
This is a hello.
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
How are you? investigative journalist, adjunct professor at RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have
you. Is anything ticking you off today?
No, I'm in a mellow mood. I went to Yaddo this weekend.
They did you?
One of their rare open tours, which Sarah and Joe did a great job talking about, and it was really stunning and such a sad story. The family that set up this very old artist residency lost all of their children to childhood diseases, including diphtheria. And the mother got it, and the doctor said, oh, sure, you can see your kids. They both got it. Two of them got it and died. How horrible is that?
Yeah.
And so it made us very aware of how fortunate we are to have vaccines. Get them.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place, and you get to see, you know, just how the artists work.
I could not work there. If I were so lucky as to be qualified, it's very rigorous to get in. Because John Cheever is there, Aaron Copland, giants, titans of painting and music and
dead
art.
Now.
I know, and you would sit there where they were and say, okay, right, now you produce. Yeah. The pressure would just kill me. I'd end up curled up in bed, getting the food they brought in, reading novels.
I was at dinner with a group of people who were Yaddo Fellows not that long ago, and they said to me that one of the things that is almost as helpful is to realize that your project sucks than it is of succeeding and writing and having the breakthrough.
I don't need to go through that application process to know that.
You mean it's about lowering expectations and feeling better about it?
Well, you know, and then, because when you spend time, you're like, oh, this isn't where this should go. This is, I want to go in a different direction. But it, you know, that gives you the opportunity to do it. There's a library there of all of the books that have been written as a result of.
Oh,
you know,
there are so many books on that estate that they had their own system separate from the Dewey Decimal System to classify them. And she was, Catherine Trask, was a very enlightened employer, and allowed her professionals, that's what she called her staff or domestics, as lesser people would call them, to take out books and to educate themselves.
Amazing.
She wanted
stuff.
Smart servants.
Yeah.
Also, like all those places in the house where you go to create, like she has this beautiful alcove in her bedroom with Tiffany glass around. It's just amazing. And a big desk looking out at a window on this 400-acre estate. Yet she had to have a tower to go write in. He built her a tower to go up to write her silly novels.
You know, whatever it takes.
I know.
Whatever
it's really
it takes.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Good morning, all. Welcome. Let's get started. We have a lot to talk about, and we have I think some interesting stories to tell. I will say I'll tell a little tale out of school here. I was I sent out a bunch of topics and last night as possible topics, and Rosemary immediately responded and goes, "Oh my God, Herschel Walker."
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the story to me.
Wow. Wow!
So the Daily Beast put out a story yesterday about Herschel Walker, who you will remember is running for Senate in the state of Georgia, and is polling well in Georgia.
Oh,
we should mention. And so the gist of this story is that this pro-life candidate. Apparently a woman has come forward saying that he paid for and facilitated an abortion for her, which in and of itself is somewhat shocking. However, she has all the paperwork. She has the proof of the receipt.
I think she has the check.
The get well card he sent her later. Oh my God, she has it all. You haven't set this up totally right. He's not just pro-life. You know, my mother's pro-life. This man believes that there should be no abortion, even for incest, even for rape. He is totally against it. Yet his girlfriend comes to him and says, he's not married at the time. Girlfriend comes to him and says, I'm pregnant. And he goes, well, it just really isn't convenient for me to have a child now. It turns out it's because he had given birth, his other girlfriend had given birth to another love child that he also hid until this election. And so could you just have an abortion, which she accommodates him? This is astounding, and the man is winning. The man is winning this race against a pastor.
Could you tell us a little bit more about Herschel Walker?
About Herschel Walker?
Yes.
Well, he's a big star football player who, for some reason, I think it has to do with damage caused by his football career to his head, is a big Trump supporter, spoke at him during the Republican National Convention.
And he were buds when he was on the New Jersey Generals that I think Trump owned, right? I mean,
he was.
So he has a long-standing relationship with Trump.
Trump contributed to his wealth.
Yes, yeah. But he lived in Texas, but Trump compelled him to come back to Georgia to run against Raphael Warnock, the one who won the special election 2 years ago.
Who has his own marital problems too, I should point out. But
well,
Warnock
not like Herschel Walker.
Warnock is not a big proponent of women have no choice except when it's my woman.
By the way, on Walker, if I may,
yes.
Not only was he a football star, and of course there are to designate, or sorry, to diagnose any one individual is impossible, but he was a football star both in high school, well, in college, in high school, and professionally. He also was on the U.S. bobsled team. And I read recently that that's yet another sport that they worry about the effects of CTE on the participants in that sport as well.
CTE, once again.
Well, concussions, essentially. Yeah. Brain injuries.
Yeah, brain injuries.
His head has been banged around a lot, and we're seeing the effects of it. That's my
Well, you missed part of the part of the story that, Daily Beast was reporting, and Politico had, too, that
the chronic traumatic and encephalopathy.
Right. From banging your head around.
Yes. Yeah. Go ahead.
But his own son also spoke out and trashed his father for forcing his mother and he to move up to six times a year to hide from him because he was so abusive, according to his son.
He was a bad father, a liar, and a hypocrite. I don't care about someone who has a bad past and takes accountability, but how dare you lie and act as though you're some moral Christian upright man? You've lived a life of destroying other people's lives. How dare you?
That's the son?
That's the son.
Oh, I didn't read that. Wow.
Yeah. When you say the, it's probably a son, by the way.
Oh, well, it is, because there's other children.
Yeah, there's got to be others. But I think we're missing the point in terms of Walker's...
Well, how many points are there? Go ahead.
Well,
there's another point.
I think we're missing the point in terms of Walker's support, right? Most of the folks who voted for Trump didn't vote for Trump because they liked Trump, because they thought he was a agreeable human being. And so, too, most of the support for Herschel Walker is probably divorced from the supporters' feelings of him as a individual, frankly.
What kind of point is that? What have we come to in this country when that's what we want? And there are how many senators are there? This is a very big elite. It's so select. They're so important, and we're putting people like him in? Really, I'm sorry. That's pathetic.
The only thing worse would be if we put somebody like that in the presidency, my gosh.
Yeah. Imagine that.
I agree totally with that. Yes. And that's what it's come to. That's the biggest.
Well, I mean, people want to essentially put a disruptor in. They want to burn down the house, essentially, because they don't like the way things are, and they know that Herschel Walker will play the Trump role and just be in the face of the other senators.
So Herschel Walker did the apology tour. Well, no, he wasn't apologizing. He was denying, and he did that through our favorite talk show, Sean Hannity, and went on Hannity last night to say that I can tell you right now, I never asked anyone to get an abortion. I never paid for an abortion. And he also then, doing a little damage control, wrote a tweet back to his son saying, I love you, my son, no matter what.
That's touching.
Yes. Oh, let's vote for him. that fixes everything. Jeez.
Well, at least all the other candidates for Senate around the country are qualified people.
The broadsides from
Walker. It's your tongue in your cheek when you say that. I can see it.
The broadsides from Walker's son and the drumbeat of negative ads and other unflattering stories about his personal life are making it more difficult for him to overtake Senator Raphael Warnock, his Democratic opponent, in the polls. Warnock is slightly ahead, but just slightly, right? Not. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is not a. Mm-hmm.
It's
not
it's
a
not
major.
Runaway. I mean, it does speak also to the immense power of a popular celebrity, a football player in Georgia who brought the University of Georgia or whatever, wherever he played, Georgia. He just was beloved by everybody, that they can look past all of these other, all his other baggage, essentially, and just really like the guy. I just like that guy. You know what I mean? And that's hard, that we would make decisions about our country's future based on, I like that guy.
But he's a Heisman Award winner.
That's true. Yeah.
The other part of this, too, is that all of this, but you got to hear him speak for
he's an idiot.
15 minutes when he talks about having
He's incoherent.
There's too many trees.
Yep.
We don't have climate change.
We're getting all the bad air from China.
That's right. Yeah. The bad air comes, and then that air moves, and then
our good air goes there.
There, yes.
Brain damage.
It's quite a bit, and there you go. Anybody else have anything else on Herschel Walker?
No, but it's a close race, and I think that speaks to how fragile things are.
That also speaks to Georgia. How many votes did Biden win Georgia by? 13,000 or some number like that?
I think
you just find me what was that number? It was
like Brad Raffensperger.
Thank you. It's 11,000.
11,624.
Exactly.
Like
and just we've got to take a break, but the latest poll that was out from 7 days ago from Quinnipiac shows Warnock leading Walker 52-46%. So
yes. We'll who trusts
it should be
polls.
much further than that.
Yeah.
I do think it shows the effect, and our buddy Mitch McConnell mentioned this, right? The effect on the race that the Republicans supporting so many, let's say, difficult or unqualified candidates has had. You would imagine in Georgia, again, a state that Trump lost only by 11,000 some votes, that if you nominated the right Republican, they could easily prevail in that state. Instead, you hitch your wagon to somebody like Herschel Walker, and it's tough, despite the fact that in Georgia, the SEC football is a religion.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Mark Whitman, and Rosemary Armeo. We are talking about Senate candidates. We have just been talking about Herschel Walker, but don't worry, we'll talk about Dr. Oz in a few moments. But before we do that, we have a lot of letters on Herschel Walker, and we want to remind you about the lockbox.
Yes, thank you for that, Joe. What we're talking about here is the very survival of WAMC. We all know it. We can make it, but only when everybody does a little something. And when I say a little something, I mean it. It could be $5, it could be $100, but WAMC.org is the way to do it. We're really depending on you because now we are really into the push. Three times a year, we got to come to you and we got to say, we really do need this in order to keep going. There's no major fat cat that puts all of the money into this for everybody. No, we have to do it for ourselves. So everybody, just go to WAMC.org and put it in.
So we opened the lockbox yesterday. The fund drive will officially begin. The back and forth, nonstop good stuff will begin on October 17th, right? Is that not true?
No. Everything you say is true.
Okay. I didn't know. So you have time to finish it before we begin. That was my point.
Yes, and that's true. Let's finish it before we begin.
Yes.
It's that simple. I got a letter the other day saying, why are you people talking about money? Welcome to the world.
WAMC.org is the way to do it. WAMC.org. Okay, we have a lot of letters here on Herschel Walker. Forgot to mention, supporting abortion supports the sale of the fetus, but we don't want to talk about that now, do we? You support rapists, child abusers,
what?
And flat-out corrupt people, a.k.a. the Democratic Party. That from Nick.
Oh, Nick. Come on.
Then Amy writes, let's not pretend that Herschel Walker cares about anything except staying relevant. He's following the Republican playbook and talking points simply to win. Unfortunately, a large swath of the American populace right now is voting like they are watching a world wrestling match. Issues are less important than winning for a lot of these people, and Herschel Walker saw that opportunity and took it. He's another fixture in an increasingly nihilistic political environment. A story in the New York Times last week, the inside joke that became Trump's big lie, captures perfectly why a Herschel Walker candidacy can work. Those who are in on the joke, sniggering evilly about how an incompetent candidate like Walker can be leading in the race against Warnock, while the uninformed masses will root for their team no matter who's on the ballot. Where do we go from here when democracy is seen as a joke? We're starting to see the fruit of the seeds that were planted in the 60s and 70s, writes Nick. Centrist Americans are sick of all the social nonsense and the overspending, not to mention many other things. They are blaming it on the liberal Democrats. This is still a center-right country. Anyone on that? Mark?
The one assertion I have trouble with is, if you want to talk about fiscal responsibility, it's hard to champion the Republican cause. They talk about fiscal responsibility a lot, but they typically decrease taxes so much that in the end their deficits have increased with a larger pace than they have under most Democratic administrations. So I'd be careful about that particular comparison.
On the idea that the U.S. has always been a sort of a right-centric government, you know, so many public opinions show that Americans agree that we should have tax the rich more. Americans agree overwhelmingly that we ought to have background checks for guns. Americans agree that, you know, the majority of Americans clearly agree that a decision about abortion is a private decision and it should be left up to the woman. But we have all these laws and these policies that are contrary to that. We have a minority of people who are right centrist who are dictating it to a more moderate country, I think.
Absolutely. And we have a Supreme Court, which is hardly reflective of what people are thinking in this country.
And it's going to get worse looking at what they're deciding this term. It's going to be pathetic.
Yeah.
Tom writes, Herschel Walker, Rosemary, isn't brain damaged. He's just plain stupid.
I get yelled at for calling people
stupid. I know.
But
I know.
I can't disagree with that.
Rosemary keeps saying that Herschel Walker has brain damage. That implies there was a functioning, healthy brain in the past. I take issue with that assumption. So you get
meaner than I am.
Yeah,
I
they're
love
even
it.
Being meaner than you. That's hard. Let's say.
I just don't know how you say, yeah, I'm going to vote for that Herschel Walker. He's great. I want him to represent me, to be one of the 50 most powerful people in the
How about for number one? How about for Donald Trump?
I mean, it's tragic. People are drawn to personalities, and that's how we ended up with Ronald Reagan. That's how we ended up with Trump. I mean, you know it.
Well, there is an element of cult of personality, and Trump certainly has a lot of charisma. But the other issue, and if you wind the clock back a couple letters, is Donald Trump hated and feared the left, and there were enough people in this country that even though they probably didn't want Donald Trump dating their daughter, shared that same hate.
Or fear.
And fear. Well, they were happy to vote
hated
for him.
Hated and feared the left?
The far left, yes.
How much money did he put into leftist causes, including Hillary in the past and Newsom in the past? He's a total hypocrite. He doesn't believe in anything.
Oh, yes, absolutely. But the fear and the hatred of people on the left, it was very carefully crafted by the right, and they use it as a motivator. They frighten the hell out of people, and they say, well, I don't really exactly as you said, Mark. I want him dating my daughter, but he's better than that other crowd.
I will remind you that Hillary was laughed at when she spoke of a vast right wing conspiracy, and here we are.
Deborah writes, if some folks picked their doctor the way they pick their political representatives, they'd all be dead.
Wait till we get to the story on the dumbing down of college, and you'll see we say soon may be picking our doctors the same way. Yeah.
So does anyone suspect that Walker's polling with Trump support may be little more than Republicans seeking to plant an empty head that they can control in a U.S. Senate seat? Well,
another empty head.
Yeah,
that they can control. What about that football coach from down in Alabama?
Or a non-democratic head, for that matter. I don't think they're worried about whether it's empty or half full.
All right. So let's go to the. There's another letter here I wanted to get to, which is about. Basically talking about John Fetterman and also Dr. Oz, which brought us to the other candidate here that we wanted to talk about, and that is Dr. Oz. Interesting article in the is it Washington Post?
Yeah.
In the Washington Post about Dr. Oz and this campaign. And basically the point of this article is that you have this TV host, a doctor TV host, who has some really questionable, very strange thoughts on his on medical treatments. I believe the word snake oil salesman has been used.
Quack.
And that the that that's
weight loss.
Yes.
Controversial is another term.
Yes. So he provided these approaches, and whether they were safe or whether they worked, that was kind of beside the point. The idea in the article is that this really has also become the mantra of the campaign, that you do the same thing. You basically say, here's this product we're going to sell you, and, well, don't worry if it doesn't work or not. It's going to look good. It'll be fine. Everything will be fine. So Dr. Oz looked directly into the camera and introduced his daytime television viewers to a controversial weight loss approach, taking a hormone that women produce during pregnancy combined with a diet of 500 calories a day. Does it really work? Is it safe? Is it a miracle? Or is it hype, he asked in a 2011 episode of the Dr. Oz Show, before introducing his audience to human chorionic gonadotropin. Mm-hmm.
There's he uses the initials.
It, it's ACG.
Yeah. Much better.
That's what I know.
And to a weight loss doctor who promoted it. In fact, there was little uncertain about the HCG diet. Numerous studies conducted before Oz's show had shown that the fertility drug does not cause weight loss, redistribute fat, or suppress hunger. 10 months later, the Food and Drug Administration warned 7 companies marketing the products that they were violating the law by making such claims. Nevertheless, Oz revisited the topic a year later, providing a platform for the same weight loss doctor who claimed that HCG worked. Now, as a Republican candidate for U.S. Senate seat in Pennsylvania, a key battleground in the fight for control of the upper chamber of Congress, Oz, a surgeon, cardiosurgeon, is putting his medical background and his popular TV show at the center of his campaign pitch. At a recent town hall in a Philadelphia suburb, he said his approaches to medicine and politics are similar. If you teach people on television or whatever forum you use, they actually begin to use that information and they begin to change what they do in their lives. I want to do the same thing as your senator. I want to empower you.
I really want him to be right about the diet pills. You know, you just
no,
take
combined,
a pill.
Combined with lowering the amount of food you eat and exercise, it works.
500 calories?
Well, and really, a hormone from a pregnant woman, there are very few skinny pregnant women. And the whole thing makes no sense. But I would really like it to be true. I'm also rooting for Oprah with the keto pills that you take overnight and you lose 28 pounds like in 2 minutes. I want that to be true. But I don't believe it, and I don't want her in the Senate, and I don't want this guy in the Senate either. Yeah.
Interestingly, Oprah Winfrey, who launched him, first he was a guest on her show, a regular, and then she backed him for his own show. She said only one thing about this race. Back in December, under a lot of pressure, she released a statement that said essentially, the decision is up to the people of Pennsylvania, you know. Mm-hmm. So she's really, her credibility, which is enormous. I mean, all she has to do is, you know, it's like Joe Donahue. If she says it's a good book, the book is a bestseller.
Yeah, she also brought us Dr. Phil, too. I think we have to bring Oprah into question here.
I have
here.
Problems with Oprah, yeah.
But she's a star, and she has enormous charisma and credibility. And she interviewed the royal couple.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did. So, Dr. Oz sprouts unproven treatments for things and supposed ways to maintain and regain health, said Henry Miller, one of 10 physicians who in 2015 tried to have Oz removed from the faculty at Columbia University Irving Medical Center. Miller described Oz, in his view, as someone who has been an advocate of quack cures. Oz and his defenders have said that his approach to the program was to give viewers hope and to provide different points of view. While Oz has been criticized for promoting problematic medical claims, he also received some praise over the years for raising awareness about preventative health. So does that work in a political setting?
It works on TV, absolutely. But the trouble with it is that you're supposed to be provocative on TV. You're supposed to be provocative and raise questions. What was missing on his shows was the proper context that there's no proof for any of this. And maybe you question why you even bring it up if there's no proof. But when you get into the U.S. Senate, you can't just bring anything in and throw it out there. And I mean, it's irresponsible and it's contrary to good government. And not that others don't do that.
I was going to say it worked for Joe McCarthy.
Yeah. I know. I mean, people have abused that role as a senator. Who was it? Ron Johnson? Who brought the snowball into?
Said, there's no climate change.
There's no climate change. I mean, you know, you get silly, factless things like that in by a lot of senators. And we don't need another one, right? We need somebody.
There's another thing, though, too. Why was he promoting these things? He was getting money for it.
That's right.
He was enriching himself without regard to the information he was putting out to people. That's who you want for a senator? Big oil pharma will have a ball with this guy.
Mm. It's transactional, in other words. If I put this guy on, I get. Now,
it's corrupt,
I don't know. I don't know that this particular Washington Post story said that he received money from the promoter of HCG, for example. But,
which is why you have that doctor on three times.
Yeah. You wonder, though. Right.
Okay. Let's take a break. We'll continue when we come back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. It's the 4th of October. Want to hear a scandalous story?
Didn't we already?
This one involves me.
Okay, yes.
I was on the Dr. Oz show.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Really? Promoting weight loss cures?
No. I was an audience member. I think it was the first season of the show. And he was doing this thing about pimples. And what he did is he had like a bucket. And it was like the size of a cat box, all right? And it was heaping with cottage cheese, okay?
Ugh.
And then there's this like some sort of rubber stuff that's over the top of it, which is the skin, right? So then he had four audience members. I was one of them.
You popped a pimple?
And you get to pop the pimple.
Oh,
and
nice.
The show, so there was a point, and I'm like kneading it to the point where it erupts in the middle. And then Dr. Oz goes to show you how damaging that is to the skin, in this case, the plastic over the cat box, and that there are creams that make that better.
I am never going to think of you in the same
way. Oh.
It's a great, I'm going to put that on my IMDb page. Yeah, absolutely. So it's a great moment. And then Dr. Pimple Popper came out.
Right.
Yeah.
Now it's a series.
Yeah, that's right. Got our own show.
We were ahead of it.
Look at that. All right.
You know, speaking of pimple poppers, Joe, I just want everybody to remember not to forget that the lockbox is now open. And so
what? Okay, that I don't see that transition now.
That's a really rough transition.
I am so sorry. But
you want to pop that box full of money, right? So that it explodes.
The box is a literal.
But that would be a good
pimple.
Thing for the radio station if the box were to explode because so much money was in it.
In any case, everybody, this is very serious stuff. If you could please just go to your telephone or go to your computer and type in WAMC.org and be with us and make sure that this radio station continues. We'll just so appreciate that.
We welcome you, panel, WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and you just look right there and it says... Donate now, right? It says pop the pimple. That's what it says. The lockbox officially open, and we'll obviously talk more about that. But I do it now. Why not? All right, letters. Let's go to some letters here before we move on to other things about these candidates. And Donald Trump is stupid and you can't fix stupid. When or who gets Donald Trump first? New York, Georgia, the feds? Shouldn't we be planning for environmental worst-case scenarios or the health care for profit during a pandemic or war? But abortion, racism, ignorance, that's still interesting. That from Dan. I don't quite get that, but I'll play along. For more on Dr. Oz, I recommend the podcast Behind the Bastards, Cliff Notes on History's Worst Humans.
I like the title.
And it's about Dr. Oz. I actually have heard of that. I have not heard it, but I have heard about it. Let's say Mark's statement that Republicans don't fulfill the promises of fiscal responsibility is proven by the fact that Reagan, Bush, and Trump oversaw the biggest spending administrations in recent history. The senior Bush did have a fiscally responsible four-year term. We go to...
That's because he raised taxes. I mean, read my lips. No new taxes, then he raised taxes, and that got him knocked out.
Dennis says, I work closely with doctors. If some were to base their medical decision making on the same evidence assessment basis that they make their political decisions, then I would say beware. Fortunately, it seems they don't, but why they require less evidence for their political beliefs is a mystery to me. Why do we believe what we believe politically, Alan?
Well, I think everybody, there are a lot of reasons for that. One of the top ones is something called political socialization. It means that your mother told you what you were. I remember the day it happened with me. I came home. I said I was voting for General Eisenhower against Stevenson. That's how old I am, in the sixth grade at PS 75. And my mother said, no, dear, we're Democrats. And that's what we call political socialization. That's when you find out what you are.
Bob writes, it's laughable that the roundtable is concerned about Trump candidates possibly winning seats in the Senate for the House after all the Democratic Party spent about $50 million supporting such candidates throughout the country. The bigger threat to the democracy is when political parties try to influence the selection of the rival party candidates through direct contributions to candidates they favor. Well, we've talked about this.
We have.
Yeah. I mean,
we're not fans of that. Yes.
Well, yes. And on the list of the great problems that we have with our democracy, I don't think that's the highest. I don't think that's what controls the selection of candidates. I think some people do it all right, but I don't know that it really works.
Oh, I don't know. I think dark money, meaning money in abundance that comes from sources that you don't even know, has had far too much influence on the way that politics has turned and that candidates have been selected and promoted. I mean, it has—
Citizens United.
Right.
2000 Supreme Court decision.
Right.
Well,
right.
It can help.
That's all. It costs so much to run for anything that many qualified people, and that's at every level, including our state legislature, won't run because you spend all your time
on the
fundraising.
Phone begging for money.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
People are voting for folks like Walker, writes Anna, because they actually don't feel represented at all. There is not trust or respect for the government anymore. And so voting for someone who is at least entertaining and may change or shake things up could be a reason to vote. The country at large is so disillusioned with our government that it almost feels like it doesn't matter who you vote in anymore anyway. The sad consequence is politicians who need to make insane and hurtful claims to get noticed. I mean, can you flip that on its head and say that's completely the reason why you would vote? Because of who they're putting up.
Yeah, it seems like a stupid way to get an improvement. To put, you don't trust the people you have, so we'll put in some really dumb people who have no interest in good government. Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Thomas writes to us and says, the electorate, I think, has caught on to the practice of releasing damaging information on candidates as close as possible to the election date itself. However true this information may be, what the public is paying attention to is the timing of the information's release, which automatically makes the information political in nature in many people's minds. Whether it's Herschel Walker, Oz, or Donald Trump's Grab Them tape, I think people see the October surprise as designed solely for political purposes and not to highlight the character defects of candidates. The pattern of these so-called surprises is just so predictable at this point that I think a majority of people just shrug them off with dire consequences. When is a good time?
I think, you know, there.
What's one of the lessons that politicians have is if you have bad information about you, get it out early because people won't remember it when it's time
That's
to go
right.
to the polls. So coming out with it a little later to remind people, isn't that a better idea if it's truly something that makes them a less desirable candidate and unfit for public office?
Also, in the cases of Trump and Walker, to claim that there was an October surprise when there's been a steady release of non-flattering information, I think is a little bit of a reach.
Yeah, I mean, it's been going on for a very, very long time within the Herschel Walker campaign. I mean, there was a point, like, was it somewhere March, April, when all of the Republican leaders in the state got together and said, do we really want to do this? And they said, let's see how it goes. And now I think they still have these regular meetings of going, but we'll see, right? It's too late now. Walker, Trump, Oz et al. Simply reflect the overall ignorance of 33% of the American voters, according to Tom. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have new items to discuss. We also will give you time to go fill that lockbox. We send you to WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and do what you can. And
we really need your help, everybody. We can't do it without you, WAMC.org, as Joe just wisely said.
All right, WAMC.org. Speaking of wise, Ray Graff next. Good morning. Welcome back. Welcome back. Oh, apparently the world is ending with this music. I don't know. No one has their headphones on, so nobody heard that, did they?
No.
No, it was a dirge, I would dirge say. Music. Yes, yeah. Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Mark Whitman, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, talking about what's making news, but also talking about the lockbox.
Yeah, Joe, you know, I was on my little bit of a walk. I know that I've bored you all with that, so I'm not going to do it this morning. It was dark, and I was thinking about how we could keep this radio station alive. And we know that the lockbox is now open for the October Fund Drive. And look, folks, let's get it out of the way. We've got to save the station, SOS. So why we love the lockbox? Because we can't get a head start on our fundraising without that lockbox. We ultimately need to raise $1 million in our fund drive. Actually, 1.2, I think we're getting to. But we don't want to interrupt our programming for too long. So if you all put in something now, I mean now, I mean go, then we have the roundtable panel back on sooner. A new reason for the lockbox is that since the pandemic, we have not been able to accommodate the usual 30 to 40 volunteers to answer the phones for our drives. So we got to do it now. We got to do it early. 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262. We've only just begun to safely space just a handful of people to answer the phones to take your pledges with the help of our staff. We can take your calls, but online donations are really appreciated, and the more we fill the lockbox now, the easier we can manage raising the funds we absolutely need to operate our station. Those aren't just words. Absolutely need to operate our station. We need you. We need each and every person to do one little thing to support this radio station, their radio station, our radio station all together. So let's get it done.
WAMC.org, WAMC.org, WAMC.org. All right. Let's see. Let's go to the... I want to go to... What?
You said let's go to the, and then you sort of stole that.
Well, I was going to the next story.
Let's go to the hop.
We've been talking about, let's go to Mark here, and go in the UN Fed warning, UN calling on Fed and other central banks to halt interest rate increases. The Fed's rate increases so far this year would reduce poor countries' economic output. This from the Wall Street Journal. This UN agency warning that further policy tightening risks a global economic downturn. Mark Whitman, what say you?
I tell you, I winced when I read this because it sounds like the UN now has piled on with who's the senator from Massachusetts?
Warren?
Yeah, with Warren telling the Fed.
Elizabeth Warren today?
Yeah. Yeah, Elizabeth, yeah, sorry. They piled on with, I try to forget it, frankly.
God.
Piled on with Elizabeth Warren trying to tell the Fed that you're being too mean and people are getting hurt. The answer for both Elizabeth Warren and for the UN is that the best case scenario for the world is a healthy American economy. The quickest way to get there is for the Fed to continue doing what it has been doing. Now, this call, as well as what happened in the UK last week, does point out the fact that in the world economy, we are a huge lumbering gorilla in terms of our size. And we do inadvertently, frankly, brush up against, or even you could argue step on, other smaller economies. When we raise our rates, when the Fed raises interest rates in the United States, if other countries don't follow along, their currencies become worth less on a relative basis, and that causes economic difficulties. If we go into a recession, many of our trading partners, economic activity will be dampened significantly. So I don't disagree that there are knock-on effects around the world. And by the way, if other countries don't raise their rates as we raise ours, we actually get to export our inflation into their economies, which has been happening around the world. But the fact that the UN and Elizabeth Warren want the Fed to stop raising rates is frankly laughable.
Mark, I have a question for you. You know, the Fed probably doesn't put it this way, but isn't it really kind of at the point now where the choice has been made? A managed brief recession is better than a rampant inflation, and we'll recover from it more quickly, and that we're just, it's a planned recession at this point. They know it, and they're just not saying the word, or what do you think?
I think they're a half step short of that. I'm sure in the back of their minds, they're hoping that and then a miracle happens and we avoid a recession next year. But the Fed months ago stopped talking about a soft landing, is now saying that they're willing to run the risk of a recession in the United States. And frankly, as you say, it's a better solution than continuing with rampant inflation. If you think about the government has sort of three ways of raising money. It can beg, which is raise taxes. It can borrow, which is government debt, or it can steal, which is inflation. And the government's been stealing from every American by ramping up inflation in this country, and it needs to stop. And in order to do so, it's going to need to cool the economy. And it, by the way, the economy cools because the Fed will restrain the money supply and let economic activity and prices catch up, and hopefully we'll get out of the inflationary, I don't want to say spiral, but the inflationary environment that we've been in.
And I have a question. Isn't it all in vain? Energy prices this winter are going to blow inflation through the roof. We're anticipating a 40% increase in our energy bills, and that's in New York. It's not in Europe.
Yeah, I'd say a couple things on inflation. First of all, on energy. Number one, energy is largely baked. What you're going to hear is a lot of people who have to buy heating oil now, and they get that bill, and it's going to be 50%, 70% greater than it was. But that's not because oil went up on the day they ordered it. That's because it's been up the whole time, and they haven't filled the tank. So oil prices are actually now coming down. They will likely raise over the winter. But inflation, even with the energy and food component out, is still unacceptably high at 6% in this country, higher than it's been. And that, frankly, is what the professionals worry about more. So no, it's not in vain. We need to get what's called core inflation, excluding food and energy, out of the economy. And it'll make it actually easier for the economy as a whole to withstand what will likely happen in terms of rising energy prices.
So it's just going to be a hard winter, basically.
It's going to be a tough winter all the way around the world. I'm convinced that one of the reasons the United States and Europe knows that all this oil that we're not buying anymore is being sent to India and China, and we haven't put the brakes on that, is because we know that that oil basically then recirculates around the world and increases the supply of oil that's available. We haven't yet reoriented our economies to withstand that shock. So we haven't tried the secondary sanctions, basically calling up India and China and saying, if you keep buying their oil, like by the way, we have done largely with Iran. We tell companies and banks around the world, if you do any business with Iran, we'll stop doing business with you. We haven't done that with Russia yet because we haven't been in a position to withstand it. Once this winter's done, I think that we may be in a better position to take that step in terms of Russian oil, which is sort of circulating through the back door into the Western economy.
That's really interesting. OPEC, including and Russia, have agreed to cut production. They just made that decision.
Yeah, there are a couple. There are a couple nuances around that. Number one is OPEC can't even produce currently what it says it is capable of producing, so they can't even meet the targets that they have now. A number of countries underinvested for various reasons in production capacity. But it is clear that our friends in Saudi Arabia and the Middle Eastern version of OPEC is doing us no favors on two accounts. They're basically managing oil prices so that they are enriched, but they don't let it go so high that the U.S. frackers are back in the green and start to basically produce oil in the United States again, because they learned that lesson, that that's not helpful to them either. So they're trying to manage through the strait to their advantage significantly, but to the detriment of the West.
Interesting.
Tell us about this group that at the UN that is making this warning.
Actually, the first time I heard of them was when I read the article that you sent around, and I understand they're probably well-intending people, but someone needs to give them a basic class in international economics. They don't understand what they're asking for.
The United Nations Conference on Trade and Development. I'm just wondering how much pull they have in all of this.
Oh, I'm sure Jerome Powell did the same thing he did when he got the memo from Elizabeth Warren and put it in the garbage can. And he should. And that's part of why the Fed is supposed to be largely independent, frankly. And when the Fed does things, it does cause stress in different parts of the economy. A lot of the ways to think about markets, and I heard this recently, is you think about, you used to go to the multiplex where there were hundreds of people in each of these theaters. And the problem is if there's a big problem in one theater, you can't all get out at the same time, and it causes quite a bit of disruption. And sometimes when markets move, and you saw this in the United Kingdom last week, it's horrible when you're trying to get too many people through the door at one time. They get stomped on, and markets look like they're in disarray. The Fed is trying to manage everything very carefully, but it's still, there's no choice now but to raise interest rates and let the economy and prices catch up to the supply of money. The other thing the Fed could be doing is more dramatically decreasing the money supply, but apparently it got on that train so late that when they started to do it, they could see in the market that there were issues of liquidity. So at the same time, you wanted the exits in all these theaters to be unimpeded. If you do decrease the money supply, you decrease the liquidity in the marketplace, and they've decided that they don't want to run that risk at the same time that they're running the risks that raising rates entails. And when I say raising rates, it's just the federal funds rate, but usually the Fed is like an individual pulling down on a branch on a tree. It only has its hand on one portion, but it typically is successful in moving rates all across the maturity spectrum of that branch.
I have two other questions, okay? One is talk about what's happening in Great Britain. They have Liz Truss has had to back away from her idea of a major tax cut a la Reagan.
I like that you're already in a first name band.
Yeah. Liz. She had to back out of her tax cut. What's the implication of that? And the second thing is the massive spending that our government will soon be doing to rebuild Florida. What's going to be the impact of that on the economy? None?
Well, let me take them in reverse. I'm not worried about spending in the economy. Let's get this clear, if I may. If you're at a cocktail party and someone says, what causes inflation, I want everyone who listens to this panel to at least say, well, there's a crazy guy I listen to on the radio who says it's money supply. So let's get this, talk about Florida. If everyone else in the country is taxed, right, and takes money out of their wallet vis-a-vis the government taxation and sends it to Florida, inflation doesn't really change. Now, you can argue lumber prices in Florida are going to skyrocket, but those are minor effects. Those don't cause the kind of inflation we have in this country currently.
That's what
and secondarily, if the United States government says, we're going to spend all this money in Florida, we don't want to raise it in taxes, and says, well, but instead we're going to sell bonds to Rosemary and Joe and Alan, and you take those dollars out of your pocket, and Joe can buy the bonds too, and take those dollars out of your pocket, it's still a closed system. The dollars show up in Florida, but they've come out of your wallet a different way, right? So that's the beg and the borrow out of the terms I used earlier. The steal is when they take the money, print it, and send it to Florida.
Without any backing.
Without any backing, because that's when all the rest of us, basically the money that we have in hand, is diluted in value.
Yeah, it's not worth
and
as
sent
much.
To the Floridian. So the issue of spending in Florida is not a major contributor. Again, there are ancillary issues around if you're a construction worker in Florida, you're right. probably happy and so right. on. Now, as for the UK, Reaganomics, we talked about this last time I was on the show, Reaganomics happened at the same time as the United States eventually solved its economic problems, but generally is regarded as not the reason we solved our economic problems. In the UK, they tried Reaganomics. The markets rightfully threw up on it. By the way, the markets, when I talked a while back about...
You paint a picture, Mark.
Yeah. When I talked a while back about the risks of an economic downturn, I talked about to markets, other countries, and those who are economically vulnerable. Unfortunately, in the UK, they had a lot of people not only invested in government bonds, but invested in government bonds with leverage. So that market fell apart because they'd been advised by a bunch of bankers to do something that was frankly stupid. And it caused a whole bunch of turmoil. She's now literally backed up and she's taking the worst part of the supply side economics out of that proposal. And it's a big embarrassment for her, probably permanently, or at least for quite some time, dents the credibility of the United Kingdom's government.
So it's all bad.
Well, that was a bad episode. You know what's good about that, though, is that she, despite her initial inclination, did back up and say, we're going to undo it. It would have been worse had they tried to charge
forward. She dug in
forward.
And kept it there.
Yeah, I mean, look, people make mistakes, and at least, for God's sake, they backed up off it, which is a lot better than trying to go through with it.
That's an excellent point. How many politicians so quickly realized, I just made a stupid mistake, and I am now backing off it so quickly? I mean, that's. I think you could argue that was admirable. Where that was an end, that was to end her likely departure from that role, maybe.
Do you agree, Rosemary?
Yeah, it is powerful to say, you're right. I notice it on a small personal level, even if you write something on Facebook, for example, and someone objects and you're right, I'm going to change that. Oh, my God, they heap praise and love on you for being a reasonable person.
Yeah.
But I don't think she had any choice. I think there would have been a revolt if she did. I don't think she did it out of any, like... Oh, my goodness, I must rethink this. Oh, horrors. I still think she thinks she's right, and she's going to try to back around. I think there's still a lot of aspects of that plan, other than the big, giant tax cut. You know, that was only part of the money she was going to raise. There's a lot of bad stuff in there. I still think Britain is in big trouble.
Yeah, well, the U.K. has much – back to your point around inflation, the U.K. has – we talked about this – has a larger portion of its inflation tied to rising energy prices
than
almost any of the large Western countries. Yeah, the bad news for them and for us is that the economic downturn next year is inevitable, but it's better than rampant runaway inflation. And that's back to the point of the UN and Elizabeth Warren writing letters saying that we shouldn't deal with inflation. We should just, I don't know what the alternative is, let it run. I understand it has profound implications for other countries and the more vulnerable, but you can't deal with those knock-on effects by ignoring the contagion in the U.S. because the health of the U.S. economy over the long run is beneficial to all participants in the world economy.
So you reject the idea that this inflation is different than inflation in the past, brought on by required spending and the pandemic. I don't fully understand all how Elizabeth Warren thinks it's different, but you reject
inflation of this magnitude is always and money everywhere supply. A monetary money phenomenon.
I've learned that from you.
That's a mutated quote from Milton Friedman, but it's true.
Okay.
Okay, so let's go. We're going to change the subject. Let's go. We've got about 6 minutes before we go to a bottom of the hour break. The Washington Post reporting, this is an exclusive for them, that Trump's lawyer refused his request in February to say all documents were returned. After the initial return of 15 boxes, attorney Alex Cannon thought there might be more records at Mar-a-Lago, people familiar with the matter said. So Alex Cannon apparently didn't want to lie to...
Right. Lawyers don't like to lie.
To the archives, right. So he asked one of his lawyers to tell the Archives and Records Administration, NARA, in early 2022 that he had returned all materials requested by the agency. However, Cannon declined because he was not sure the statement was actually true. Mm. As it turns out, thousands more documents, including some highly classified secrets, remained at Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence and private club. The later discovery of those documents through a May grand jury subpoena and the August 8th FBI search of the Florida property are at the heart of a criminal investigation into the potential mishandling of classified material and the possible hiding, tampering, or destruction of government records. I don't know about you, but this was the line that, Cannon, an attorney for Trump, had facilitated the January transfer of 15 boxes of presidential records from Mar-a-Lago to NARA after archives officials agitated for more than a year to get all original presidential records back, which they are required to do by law. Following months of stonewalling by Trump's representatives, archive officials threatened to get the Justice Department or Congress involved. And this is the line that really bowled me over. Trump himself eventually packed the boxes that were returned in January. The former president seemed determined in February to declare that all the materials sought by the archives had been handed over, who, like others interviewed for the article, spoke on the condition of anonymity. So he went through all the stuff, put it in a box, and said, anything else, this is what was returned and this is what will be returned. Mm-hmm.
So in your mind's eye, can you see Donald Trump taking stuff from one place and putting it into another in order to do that? Basically, well, secretarial function.
You know, I just think it's funny because and you're absolutely right now. I mean, we were talking on the show several times about, well, you know, it's not like the president of the United States is taking his own records and putting it, you know, or the former president putting it in a box. And, well, yeah, now he was.
Did any of you see the article in the opinion section of the New York Times yesterday? It was by Gail Collins and Brett Stevens calling for debating
a
pardon for Trump for the whole Mar-a-Lago thing. Let's just get past it. It's a minor charge. The country doesn't want to hear about it. They might lose the case anyway.
Brett Stevens was making that case, but I think
she had a certain. Yeah. She didn't squelch it. She didn't say, "Are you crazy?" I'm worried about this case.
Well, the argument was that if Biden were to just give him Trump a pardon for these records,
that was
hassle,
it
would eliminate.
Denied his martyr card.
Yeah, right. It would deny him his martyr card, right? But it would also require Trump to sort of accept Biden as having the authority, which means he would recognize him as president, and it would take it away as a kind of, as you say, you know, as an issue
I don't want that to happen.
I think it's wrong. I think it's a very serious breach. He's keeping records on foreign countries' nuclear strategies, and it's.
I want to see the note from the North
Kim
Korean
Jong-un.
Leader. Yeah, why is that? Why is he holding on?
Because it has
that?
A lot of monetary value.
Monetary value. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no. I heard the language is really flowery about their mutual love.
Yes. I fell in love, yeah.
By the way, I think that's a horrible idea. First of all, it misses the point. In order to stop Trump, we need to stop him politically. All this other legal stuff is important but a sideshow. Merrick Garland, you have to trust Merrick Garland's going to adjudicate what needs to happen with respect to the case around that. And by the way, any would-be fascist like Trump will never yield his martyr card, no matter what Joe Biden does.
Oh, what a good point.
Yeah, that's a great point.
You're absolutely right.
I agree.
You're absolutely right.
Brett Stevens says, is there a side of you, Gail, that kind of hopes Trump gets a nomination on the theory that it would be easier for the Democratic nominee to beat him than to beat DeSantis? Gail says, that was indeed my feeling for a while, but watching DeSantis during the hurricane crisis made me feel that maybe he just doesn't have the electricity you need to be a presidential candidate. Really, I was sort of shocked by how flat he seemed in his public appearances. Biden, who became president by being the Dell guy who wasn't scary, was more moving when he went to camera to talk about Florida. Brett said, I see it a little bit differently. DeSantis is smart enough to know that now is the time to drop the political antics and act like a sober, competent governor.
Yeah, again, Mark Thielson, the conservative columnist in the Washington Post, wrote a pan to DeSantis and his brilliant leadership during the crisis in Florida. Why do they have him? He's awful.
Why do all the other newspapers pick up his column? Because they have guilt about how many
liberals they have.
So they say, we'll put Mark Thielson in there and that'll cover us.
DeSantis,
the guy's nuts.
DeSantis realized that there was only downside for him in the hurricane.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? So he played to cover his downside. On answering why you look, Trump and his people are the ones that I fear are going to pierce through the guardrails and imperil our democracy.
Yep.
DeSantis is not as charismatic and he hasn't shown that predilection. So I fear him a lot less than I do Trump.
And yet he's the number one potential candidate after Trump.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Last go round for our group this morning, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Mark Whitman, and Rosemary Armeo. A lively conversation thus far. Let's remind folks, Alan, about the lockbox and the fact that it's open and people can help, and we're starting I think the 17th, and they can get this thing over with before it begins.
I want all you English majors, I don't really mean it, but it's the cruciality of this that has become important.
Cruciality.
Okay. Mike
That's great. But we won't make
not
it.
Helpful.
No, it is helpful. It's always helpful when you add levity to the purpose that we're about. And what we are about is saving the radio station. We said so the first day, SOS, that we started to raise money for this radio station. It is Save Our Station. And if you haven't done anything yet, could you just go to the lockbox right now at WAMC.org and put something in? I'm told by our front office staff that the money is coming in, and what we need is your help to make it really happen. WAMC.org will do it.
WAMC.org. We would love to hear from you. We know we will. You are wonderful, and we thank you, but we need to get there, and you know what to do by now, right?
You know the drill.
WAMC.org, and just go to donate now. If you absolutely need to, you can call 1-800-323-9262. We don't have a setup with volunteers. Mm-hmm. We're still playing it safe. COVID still is present. We're not maybe as optimistic as the president that it's over. So,
so is it over?
Well, we hope that we're looking in the rearview mirror at it, is I think the best way to put it.
I think this I think the president was making the pandemic to endemic argument, right?
So we're pretending it's over.
I
agree with you, Rosemary.
I agree.
Yeah,
we're living as if it's over mostly.
Yeah.
Get your booster shots.
Yes, get your booster shots. You got yours. I was using you as an example. This is actually true, Mike. I don't know if so. You tell me that if I got this right. But yeah. But my wife and I were talking about this, and I said, she said, can we get our flu shot and our booster shot together? And I said, well, Mike Spain did.
Yes.
And she said, well, I trust Mike. If he did it, then I know we can do it.
Yeah. Sure. Actually, after, you know, when my wife and I...
But your arms didn't fall off or anything,
no, they
did they?
They were sore. But, you know, it was like, I said it was like the Mandy Patinkin character in The Princess Bride where he got stabbed in both arms. But it was tough, but no. There is now some debate, and you can look at it that, you know, you might as well wait 2 weeks and do one and not the other. But at the pharmacy I went to, they said it's no problem. And I'm glad it was over, and I feel double protected now for the flu. And I got the double dose because I'm a senior citizen of the flu vaccine. And I got my Omicron vaccine, you know, booster shot. So I feel like I can sort of pretend that the pandemic is behind me.
Kelly, I also got a polio shot, by the way.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because I don't, you know, the little scratch. That
does it wear off?
They don't know. They don't really know for sure. Because we have not had to worry about it up until these idiot anti-vaxxers have made disease rampant in the world again. Thank you very much, Jenny McCarthy.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Yeah. Yeah, Robert F. Kennedy
Jr.
Big disappointment. Really a big disappointment. So I travel to places where there is polio. It has not been completely eradicated. And now it's in New York again. So I got another booster shot.
Yeah. Are they finding the cases or are they just finding it in the supply?
Both.
Yeah.
A few cases, but it's in the water supply, presaging perhaps more cases to come.
I know I'm getting off topic here, but is it a booster or is it the actual shot?
It's another shot.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So like it would be starting from
scratch. Because they just don't know.
And right.
I told you I went to...
I'm with you. I think that's... Yeah, like I don't want to... Take any chances.
I don't know that it's recommended as a broad societal step right now.
No,
but if you travel to third world countries, as you do, it's probably really a good idea.
Yep.
Yeah. And you were going to finish that sentence, Rosemary.
Well, again, I was going to. I said it at the beginning. The Trask family was another reminder. You know, she got diphtheria, which is also one of the shots that you're supposed to get before you go to school, public school.
That's
in
the
this
founder
country.
Or the benefactor for
Yotto.
In Saratoga.
I mean, I go to countries where they would die, literally, they are dying, for lack of shots that we get. We don't even have to pay very much for them here. And to turn your nose up at them to say that you know more than the medical field is just appalling.
I regularly tell my son that there are kings and queens who would have given half of their kingdoms to get their kids inoculated.
Yeah, that's so true.
David McCullough, the late historian, in your final interview with him that you ran at the time of his death, he said that is one of the most underrated achievements of our modern times, and that is the vaccines to fight disease. It is just underrated. Yeah. We just don't realize how lucky we are.
I hate Donald Trump to the bone. To my core, I dislike him. But Operation Warp Speed, which got vaccination against COVID in record time, he deserves credit for that. He doesn't want it himself, but he deserves credit for that.
Just to clarify that, if I may, my recollection is Pfizer had nothing to do. One of the two manufacturers, and I think it was Pfizer, when they came out, actually said, we didn't participate in Operation Warp Speed.
So, well, they had been working for years on a coronavirus.
Solution. Oh yeah, and type. so too had Moderna.
Moderna,
but
they
signed up for Warp Speed, but Pfizer didn't. So look, I am fine to applaud Trump for what he did, but I don't think what he did included Pfizer's efforts.
It doesn't matter. Pfizer is involved in the competitive environment of pharmaceuticals, and getting that vaccine was going to enrich any company that did.
Yeah.
So they moved too, even if they weren't formally part of
gotten
the program.
There. They would have gotten there anyway. So you can keep hating Trump as much as you did before.
I will anyway.
Perfectly okay.
Yes.
Yeah, it's all right.
All right, I want to get to the most important story of the day. Which is, should a college professor get fired if their course is too hard?
Wow.
NYU students were failing organic chemistry. Maitland Jones Jr., a respected professor, defended his standards. The students said, it's too hard, and they started a petition. And they got a few signatures, and then they got a few more.
75 out of hundreds of signatures.
And then they got more, and then they presented them to the administration, and he was fired. In the field of organic chemistry, Maitland Jones has a storied reputation. He taught the subject for decades, first at Princeton, then at NYU, wrote an influential textbook, received awards for his teaching, as well as recognition as one of NYU's coolest professors. But last spring, as the campus emerged from pandemic restrictions, 82 of his 3,350 students signed a petition against him. Students said the high-stakes course, notorious for ending many a dream of medical school, was too hard, blaming Dr. Jones for their poor test scores. The professor defended his standards, but just before the start of the fall semester, university deans terminated his contract. The officials also had tried to placate the students by offering to review their grades and allowing them to withdraw from the class retroactively. you know, a participation trophy. The chemistry department's chairman, Mark Tuckerman, said the unusual offer to withdraw was a one-time exception granted to students by the dean of the college.
You know, I taught, and as so many, you know, Rosemary certainly has, and you have, Joe, and that scares the hell out of me. The idea that your grades are now going to be reviewed for whether they're too hard or not never happened to me, but I'm not saying that there weren't people with objections to the grades they got from me.
This is happening everywhere. This is an egregious case that lets us talk about it, but it's happening everywhere. I had students at UAlbany come and complain about a colleague that she was requiring too much writing. And I said, you're a journalism student, and you're complaining about a teacher who's making you write. Does she make you read too? Wow, what a witch. And shut them down. And that is what should have happened. Now, on the other hand, I read the story carefully. This guy has a storied past, but that doesn't mean he's any good now. And I do think retirement is a good idea. That's why I personally am opposed to the idea of tenure. Even though I had it, I gave it up. And I think that I need to retire soon because I have no patience with these students. I know it's true that you get complaints and it's too hard, and I have no patience with it. But this guy, read about, he's the one who moved from rote memorization to problem solving, which is exactly what you should be doing. He provided all kinds of help for these kids, videos and extra help. They did not avail themselves of this.
Just
they
for
wanted
context
it handed it to them.
Of what you were talking about, but 84 years old.
Yeah, 84. Come on. I really, sorry, I am an ageist. I think that's too old to be teaching. It's really hard to relate.
You can learn a lot from someone who has wisdom. This particular guy had a lot of complaints. He was condescending and he was a bully to the students. I mean, there's so many factors in this that you just can't, it's not generic.
I just want to say ageism is very dangerous.
It is, but this may well be a person who should be doing like guest lectures or special kind of teaching, but to have a whole course, I don't know. I think it may have been right to let him go, but not for this reason. Not because students, I'd
signed
love to see what their grades were. Yeah. I'm betting anything they were the lowest performing students in the class. Don't like him. And do you want doctors who had to get a dumbed down
chemistry
organic chemistry class?
They said that he had tried to conceal course averages, did not offer extra credit, and removed Zoom access to his lectures.
Yeah, it sounds like this was a little bit of a one-off. But, there's another issue here. Are all the college students, all the future engineers, the future economic advisors and financial people, the doctors, the lawyers, are they all going to have a deficit because they were in college during or law school during the pandemic?
Or in K-12 during the pandemic.
And how do we as a society address that deficit
Make
so that
up,
we can
right.
still have enough doctors or airline pilots or you name it?
Right.
I remember going to... I don't know
the answer.
You know, you have like 25 students and you say like, well, 13 of them are failing. And I went to my department head and I said, the 13 students are failing. And I was getting ready for like the you know, this is how you motivate your students. This is what you do. And then she said, I hope you grade on a curve.
Yeah.
I thought, wow.
Yeah,
that wasn't what
I
was expecting.
Grade inflation has been a problem for a long time because higher ed is in trouble. They need people to come into the school. Boys are dropping out. I mean, where are all the boys in college? It's crazy. And so, you're catering to the students, but this does them no service whatsoever. They're not getting the education they should. They should be held to high standards, forced to perform. I can remember being in college having no idea what was required of an assignment, crying that I thought I was so stupid that I couldn't get it. But you try your best, and that's all the professor's trying to do, push you into something above yourself that you do better than you think you're capable of doing. And we're going to lose that. I think this is a really terrible mark on education in the country.
Well, good educators should be a lot like good managers. And the answer is to help people fulfill their potential, not to only serve as a gatekeeper. But of course, there's always inherently a gatekeeping function at the end of a certification process. But I have one request, which is, Rosemary, please don't retire. I and other professionals when these kids graduate, now have to deal with them. They are a different lot.
Unprepared kids who feel entitled, and you're going to accommodate them. It's very dangerous.
Yeah, the bad news is I can't accommodate them because our clients won't accommodate us. And I tell them, you know, if we don't do it for the client will hire somebody else who does accommodate them.
Great point. Exactly. Yeah. We're out of time. My thanks to everybody. Reminder, the lockbox. WAMC.org.
Such a reminder.
WAMC.org. Do what you can. We'll be back right after this.